stuck it in my sketchbook next to some orange crayon and went, oh, that's a brilliant green next to orange.
Do you know what? We have to be at this point. Can we just say, like, we started off talking about like holidays and spa weekends and da 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 da. Right. Can we just all be really grateful and take a moment about how ridiculously excited and happy we get about a bit of cardboard from a dog food box?
Hi, and welcome to episode 194 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And today we're going to do a deep dive into a really interesting topic that Alice suggested, which is, what is the idea behind your art? But before we get into that, what have you been up to, Alice?
I had a lovely painting day. It just makes me laugh sometimes how you go in thinking, I'll do one thing, and then you start painting. And you just sort of get drawn along by the current, don't you?
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it as a really embodied sort of example of, firstly, two things happened. One, I went in thinking, oh, I just done a couple of random starts. It didn't really like anything. And I went in and I had made, I think, two rounds of changes before. And when I opened the jar, I was like, oh, there's some beautiful things starting to happen here. And there's this mix of what are we ready to shake up and what's going to settle in place, which are going to be the parts that are going to go and be discarded in this process. And where are the parts that are leading me into the direction that I want to take these paintings in, or the direction that the paintings want to go in? Even if that's perhaps not how I intended, this is how it is now. This is how it is happening with these group of paintings in the studio. Just go with this. And yeah. it was really lovely. So I've done that. I've had a good day. I had a meeting last night. I went to the opening of somebody who will be coming on the podcast next month, just to meet in person, get off of Zoom. I thought we would have a much nicer Zoom conversation if we'd met and said hi in the flesh first. So that was quite good fun. And I had a weekend away with my daughter, which was excellent and involved more cold.
You didn't go in another cryotherapy chamber, did you?
No, we went in a natural outdoor swimming pool, which has got lovely, it's all tiled and lovely, like a little small pool with reeds at one end, 3.9 degrees. The second day was easier than the first day, and it was coupled
there
with,
was a,
you know,
second
nice
day.
Steam room.
This is the difference between me and Alice. There was a second day.
Second day involved lengths.
If the first day had even involved me getting in, the second day certainly wouldn't have.
It was really nice. It was lovely. And I came away thinking, oh, should do this more often. Should do this once a year, twice a year. Could you do it every weekend? Every quarter, at least every quarter. This is a new necessity. So it was very nice, which also led me to these thoughts of, isn't it funny how we have things that we reserve as treats, or that we think that we can only do like one time? Actually, you know, how could I do more of that?
Yes, there's a lot of rules about that. Like, I have this thing of holidays from the years of working where you got, well, in America, you got 2 weeks holiday a year. That was it until you got senior, and then you got 3 weeks. And so that was holidays. And then my friend said to me a couple of times, I said, I fancy going there. And he's like, why don't you just go? You could still work from wherever you go. Still take, why not go? Yeah, actually, why not go? That is a good point. I don't think of, yeah, it's just a good point. You don't think of that these things are possible, because we were programmed to think of things as they have to happen just on a rare basis. It's like you with your flowers that you get.
Yeah, flowers and flowers. Massage.
She's adding to the list gradually.
Every year there's something new that I think, oh, that'd be nice to do that. Oh, well, I'm not giving that up now. but even that, I saw that Helen Perry, who, if you don't listen to her podcast, by the way, which is called Just Bloody Post It, she's excellent on all things, you know, finding your confidence in, you know, social and marketing. I just love the way that she does things. And she's been on a kind of girls 4-day trip ski weekend. She says, I'm rubbish at skiing. Took it up really late in life because we couldn't afford it earlier, but I'm really rubbish at it and I absolutely blooming love it. And this is the best weekend of the year and it's just really good fun, you know. And it's that kind of, I think that's, it's quite hard often to transition from one mode of thinking, oh, we've got young children, we can't afford this kind of a holiday, into, but there is a way that it could make sense.
Yeah.
And I really like it when people share that kind of stuff. It goes back to the conversation we were having last week about sharing things that are broader than just your art and what you do, because often it's those kind of ideas that spark things in people. Oh yeah, well, if she can do it, why can't I?
Yeah.
Huh, what would that look like? That could be fun. It might not be skiing or cold water. What would it be for you then? Let's play that game.
Oh gosh, it wouldn't be anything involving pain. It wouldn't be anything involving strenuous physical activity.
What about a summer sunshine holiday in the middle of winter?
No, I'm not a big fan of being too warm. So, do you know what? It's funny. I watch you doing all these things and I don't have any envy, but I like watching.
Mm.
But there isn't anything in me that wants, maybe it's just that I'm older. Maybe it's that I spent so much time doing adventurous things when I was young. I don't know, but I don't have great desires for things other than to do what I'm doing now. Like I had a few days this week last week where it was just perfect day for me, a perfect day. And yet I barely spoke to anyone. I just was painting, I was editing some videos, I was doing creative things all day. And at the end of the day, I was like, that was a good day. That was a good day. I really enjoyed that. So you'd have to give me a bit of time before I could think if there's anything adventure-wise I want to do.
But this is the thing. No, and it doesn't have to be adventures, does it? I mean, you're doing a bit of like making sure that your home space feels truly your own.
Yes, I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to eat well, to look after myself better. It's funny. I don't have... you stumped me now. I have to think more.
All right, moving on.
I wish I spent more time with my friends and I wish I got out more and did more things. I mean, day trips around here, go for walks around here, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't, because I'm so involved in what I'm doing and so engrossed in it. Yeah. So
yeah, it's just something to play with, isn't it though?
Yeah. I think you're a lot more, I think your extrovert nature is very clear in, I don't know if this is an extrovert introvert thing, but I suspect it is, in your engagement with the outside world is what brings you energy and joy. And in an introvert's world, it's your internal world that is the source. And where an introvert is unhappy is if they can't access that. And I suppose this time painting, where I'm really involved in it and enjoying it, is that introvert heaven.
Yeah.
That's why we liked the pandemic. We didn't like the pandemic. I don't want to make light of people dying. But lockdown was like, oh, wow, welcome to our world. It's lovely here. And all the extroverts were going, ah, let me out.
So you've had some perfect days this week. What else?
Yeah, perfect days. It's really just been painting, also some business stuff. But, oh, and I got my US taxes filed 2 months ahead of the earliest deadline. So expats can file up till October, but the real deadline is April, and I have done mine in February. This is a first. This has never happened. And my UK ones are done. So that was a good feeling. It's just been nice because I've pleased myself and I've had a lot of peace. And as a human design manifester, I've learned peace is the one thing that we seek above all else. And I have just
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is really interesting.
All right.
Well, I think it is.
It's the opposite,
actually,
probably, of what you would seek.
Well, not because it's the opposite of what I would seek, but I think you and peace, in a way, is not what I would necessarily put together, because I see you being so busy and doing so many things.
Yeah. But there's a difference for me when I'm frenetically doing things I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
Or when I'm really busy doing things I do enjoy, there's this sense of inner peace. And when the peace gets disrupted is when there's too many outside things coming in
yeah.
that I don't want to do or don't want to deal with. Then I don't feel at peace. Then I get angry. That's my reverse of peace, is anger and irritation and frustration with, leave me alone and let me just get on with what I'm trying to do. And I'm learning more about this human design and seeing how it plays out, and that I need to find ways to find more peace and not force myself to do things I don't want to do.
Is there anybody who enjoys that interruption, though, from things they don't want to do? Or maybe it's just that some people manage to handle it better than others. Because I can't imagine there's anyone who goes, oh, yeah, I love it when I have something planned and I just get all
That's true. But when I hear you speak about all the things you're doing, all the adventures you're having, I love it for entertainment. It's like I can live vicariously and experience those things without having to do them. But the feeling it brings in my mind is like a kind of jangling, like, too much. So it's that, I suppose, that I mean by peace. I just like it to be really quiet in here and not too much. And so, but it is the opposite of many, many people who want the constant inspiration and sparks.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really feed me in the way that being inside my own head does.
Yeah. We've mentioned before on here, but we better mention again, like, sort of what human design is. If it sounds interesting, have a Google. You can get a chart done free. Loads of websites do it. And it is a system of using basically I Ching and lots of different things and astrology, and it's energy centers and how you operate best. So it's another way of just looking and seeing how you understand yourself. And if you read it and you think this is a load of nonsense, this doesn't make any sense to me, fine. And if you find it insightful and helpful, fine.
Now, we both thought it was a load of nonsense when we heard about it. And then we read our profiles and went, oh.
Initial skepticism, yeah, really high. But yeah, it is interesting.
So I got this message from Alice at about 11 o'clock last night, I think, that said, idea for podcast. What did you say? The one idea behind your work, I think you said.
Probably didn't make any sense because we'd been out to a, here you go, we're going to set you going again. We'd been out and then we'd walked all the way back past. There's a very nice Moroccan restaurant that I walked past, I don't know, maybe 70 times. We've never been in. And Paul and I were out anyway at this exhibition. I was like, let's go there. And it's difficult in London, actually, because there are so many big chainy restaurants, but to find those little independent ones. Anyway, we had just absolutely stuffed our face full of lovely tagine, something called a brick. Sounds appetizing, doesn't it? Which I'd never had before. So that's on my list of new things to eat that I've never had before. And I was quite well stuffed with a glass of champagne and a glass of wine. I'm trying to find my message that I sent you. Podcast idea. What's the one essential idea in your work? Ah, good one. This is it. This is our planning. Right. Where did it come from?
Yes. Tell us where you got this from.
It came from some conversations that I'd been having during the day and this experience that I mentioned at the beginning about going into the studio and having lots of new ideas. So I am open head in human design, lots of new ideas, very absorbent of lots of different things going on. Sometimes find it hard to settle, which is why I think I need the systems and the structures to help me do that. But it was just this feeling that I'd have of there are all the things that I'm excited by that I want to do, and I'm still always pulled in this direction. And I've been having this conversation with people during the week, and then we went to this exhibition, which was, it's all about a common theme of colour, but it has come out in different ways for this person, like making things and models and, you know, writing books, like not about colour, but the history, the story of colour, and in these objects too. So that was a very clear one theme. And in the course of these discussions, I'm just aware that so much of what I do in my work comes down to some kind of internal, external struggle, how we see the world around us, how we respond to it. And you're doing a really weird thing in trying to turn it into a painting that is meaningful for you and for other people. And for me, it comes through the way colour is used and what it does. And that's why I stopped doing printmaking, because it didn't have the colour element.
Right. So when you say
colour's quite generic. So,
but you said internal, external. That sounded more like the actual idea.
Yeah.
Is that the, so tell us more about that. What does that mean?
Well, I think when I first started, I wasn't satisfied with visual representation of things. I knew it had to be about more than that. And that there was this interplay between, in my mind then, the two words were chaos and control.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a much more chaotic space then. I was coming out of depression. Life was pretty chaotic with two small children. So this idea of chaos to me now feels rather extreme, but that was what it was then. That was what was coming up then. And this sense of, okay, there are lots of things, and where is there a control? How do I find a system that works? And I can't remember it, but there's a quote from, I think he's an American artist, Darby Bannard, and he says something about working out an organizational structure that makes sense. And I think art so often is about us making sense of the world for us and other people. That's where we get the connection points. But what element of that is it for you? So initially for me, I think it was quite visual things. It was the marks. Were the marks chaotic? Where did they feel? Well, if it was just chaotic, that was just one side of it. You also needed this balance of control. And we're going back to 2015 here, so quite a long time, this idea of these two opposing balances on things. And the idea of internal, external, I think it just plays at the moment with me, and this is a weird kind of relationship between you as the artist, the format that you're choosing, like the canvas or the panel or whatever you're painting on or whatever you're creating, and the end user. It's almost like a Chinese whispers of ideas that has to lead you through the process of making the painting and what comes out the other end. And there is something for me in the idea of where we find ourselves in space, how we relate to the world around us, what we choose to pick up on, notice, and some kind of way of sort of making that visible in the painting, with a sense of, there's always been something as well for me in a close-up understanding and looking of something that you can look, feel and touch and see and notice, and a bigger distant kind of feel. So when I can get that with paint, where the paint feels like a sense of distance and almost something that's very physical that you can touch and feel and texture on the canvas, that's when I've got it, and that's my weird idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody else at all.
It kind of does. So the internal and external is being expressed through the close-up and the distance, in a way. Or yeah, am I getting that wrong?
No, I think that's it. I think that's it. And it's just this sort of, it is a fluid idea, and it change, you know, and it changes, and how I express it changes. But I think actually it is quite a consistent flow from that initial idea of chaos and control through to this, which is the essential core of it, is how we understand how we exist and relate to the world around us. Whereas for other people, like, storytelling is massive in their art, and I love it in other people's paintings. I love, love, love it. Like, where there's a painting that feels like it tells a story, or it's, you know, it's got a picture, or it's part of something, or there's intrigue, or I don't know what it's about, or almost there's a sequence of images and you're feeling like you have to thread it all together like this magic fairy tale. But I love it because I don't do it, because I don't think that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of the art we buy is to bring in something that we don't have. I see that, I'm sure you do, with collectors too, people who've bought you, I never know what's called, collectors sounds poncy, but buyers, customers, whatever, yeah. People who've bought your work, and you look at them and they're so different from the painting. Yeah. I always remember taking this one painting to this quiet, almost mousy man. And his house was full of local artists' work, but it was all really emotional, powerful landscapes with gloomy skies and drama. And then he was buying something from me, which was quite emotional. And he just was the last person you would have thought. But obviously, he wanted that in his life.
Yeah.
And his house was very clinical. And then all this art was very chaotic. And I found that interesting. So, yeah, I think we do. So when I was thinking about this, I was, of course, get all intellectual about it and start going into all this detail and get confused a little bit in my own head because there's so many ideas in there. And so I tried to trace it, like go to 20,000 feet or whatever they say, 20,000 miles in the sky, and then come down. And so what I got to was, it's always like, I have an overarching belief about art, which doesn't mean I'm telling other people they should do their art this way, but it's my, what I like, what I care about in art. And by that, I mean music, writing, painting, is that it's about connection, one human to another, which you mentioned, but also that the personal is universal. So the more an artist expresses their unique emotions and feelings and experiences, the more their art will connect with other people. So it follows that the artist's job in my world is to express their most honest self, almost like expose themselves. So I'm approaching this a bit differently than the way you were thinking about it. But first of all, I'm saying, right, so I respond to art that is where the artist is truly exposing emotion. I know there's all kinds of other art, political art, intellectual art, academic art, but none of that interests me in the way that art that really exposes the artist's inner self and then connects with you because you feel the same way. I've always loved that in literature and music, and I love it in paintings. So it leads on that I feel like I'm always trying and currently never succeeding, but always trying to get rid of any artifice in what I'm doing and to get to the truth. But then, because we have so, when you get to the truth of yourself, there's millions of things in there. It's not just one thing. So the way it's worked for me in my art is that I've always had kind of like a sub idea. Like, if that's what I believe I should be doing, I should be expressing as much of myself as I can authentically and not being pretentious and not hiding anything, then different projects do that in a different way. So the Ted Hughes thing was about the life force. That was what the book was called. But it was about my feelings about the poems and why they resonated so deeply. And it came down to his idea about a life force that runs through the universe that is much more powerful than humans. And so that was one thing, whereas in my current work, and maybe it is linked, but it's about personal history. And in my current work, I haven't fully unearthed all the ideas. I've got pages and pages of notes, but there's too many things at the moment. But it's about my personal history and about things hidden and revealed and about dark and light. And within that, then the way I work is to try and think, okay, what marks, what colors, what materials, what process might get me to expressing that as honestly as possible? If that makes sense.
It does make sense.
It's hard to put it into words. It's so hard to put it into words.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the point here, is that it's the fumbling around with the work and in the words. That's how we get to something that feels meaningful. And we're both talking about things that involve kind of quite a lot of, you know, deeper digging.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be, I mean, you've said this, it doesn't have to be that for everybody. Like, I hear you talking about searching for a certain kind of, well, I'm not sure if rawness is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a kind of vulnerability in exposing the different parts, both the different parts, but you're also saying that at some point it settles, so it gets a slightly clearer container, boundaries, edges to it, because otherwise it's too big.
Yeah, like, here's all of me in right. a painting. That's yeah. never going to happen.
Yeah, so there is some kind of honing down that happens in the writing about it that gives you a little bit of structure so that you have understanding about what this work is about. And I'm also interested in that moments where when you have that as an understanding and then you find you're going through a process of it and the end result isn't what you want. Is that always just it isn't what you want yet and you just keep going and that's when it feels resolved and ready?
Yes. So when I did the Ted Hughes paintings, there was like a year where it wasn't getting what I wanted, more than a year probably. It was so frustrating, but I think it's in there, right? Mm. I always think it's in there, but I'm in the way. So it's like I have to get myself out of the way. With this series I'm working on now, I suppose because I'm more experienced and maybe I can get a bit clearer a bit more quickly, I have a clear sense of what elements are going to be in the paintings that is going to help me to get to that point. The challenge with that way of working, I'm thinking, although I've got 10 things going, I think, or 11. But I think the challenge with that way of working is it can become like a straitjacket. So it's great at first to get me going. I know, I'll give you an example because this sounds very vague. So I know I want it to be about history and present and or future. So I want these layers. I put these layers of vintage papers down and I use vintage papers because they're amazing when you sand them. Like they go into the wood. They just kind of melt into the wood and they make these amazing marks. So layering papers and paint, sanding back, that gives me the texture that suggests a hidden depths and history. And then over the top of that, coming in with paint or other media to bring in what's present or future is my current theme. And also I decided black, I wanted black in there for difficult things. I wanted black set against very saturated color. I've been toying with black for a while, so it's not like a new idea. It keeps coming in, so I brought it in. And then finding the right saturated colors to really pop against the black. And now I think it might go forward into other darks, not just black, but all this is kind of germinating. So I get all those elements and I've made a few paintings that I absolutely love and that capture everything I want. So it could then veer into a production line, where yes. I could go, right. Okay, I know what to do now, send the paper. Yeah. So that's what I mean by we get our idea, but we've got to be careful it doesn't turn into a straitjacket.
Yeah.
And for me, my sketchbooks are brilliant for that because I keep working in them. And I'll just give you a quick example. I found a scrap of cardboard on the floor the other day, and it was a tab off one of Riley's dog food boxes. And it was this dark green. I know. It was this dark green that was beautiful. I was like, oh, what's that? Picked it up, stuck it in my sketchbook next to some orange crayon. And went, oh, that's a brilliant green next to orange.
Do you know what? We have to be at this point. Can we just say, like, we started off talking about like holidays and spa weekends and da 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 da. Right. Can we just all be really grateful and take a moment about how ridiculously excited and happy we get about a bit of cardboard from a dog food box? This is a good thing. This is a good thing.
Good thing.
Like, how ridiculous. Oh, look at this. Look at the colour of that.
I know. And then, sorry, I'm having a little hot flash, people. So I'm just taking my jumper off. And then we get to mix up that colour. So I got to discover that colour was made with ultramarine blue and cadmium yellow with a tiny bit of black. And I got to that colour. So by sticking that piece of cardboard in my sketchbook, it spurred me to the idea that, okay, maybe I'll find dark colours that go with the bright colours that aren't black, but that go beautifully for the next set of these. So the sketchbook brings the ideas that can stop you being in that straitjacket.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a trap. Maybe that's not a trap for some people. Maybe they feel good if, okay, I've got a process. I can produce paintings. Somehow for me, it feels a bit of a trap sometimes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm stripping off.
She still got clothes on, don't worry. I'm wondering as you're talking though, like we're talking about a lot of emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have to be there? Can it be, I don't think it all has to be, you know, deep and meaningful and like some of the stuff that we're talking about, to me anyway, when I'm thinking about it, it feels quite heavy. Like I don't necessarily want the paintings to feel heavy, but the kind of inner digging and working things through, it's not surface level stuff. I like that. I like that art gives me a part of a way to investigate that part of myself. And like I say, you know, how you operate in the world, but it's definitely not that for all people.
No.
So it definitely doesn't have to be this like emotional angst element.
I think it does for me, or not necessarily angst, it could be happiness. But for someone else, it might be. So it has to be for me, because if my guiding belief is artists must communicate authentically in order to connect with others, in order to make them feel better or. But if your guiding idea was artists must make a change in the world, for example, your work would be more thoughtful in a different way, and it wouldn't necessarily have to do with emotion, although it might. It might be like political propaganda posters in the 1920s or whenever that was. I've probably got my timeline totally wrong. So it depends what your bigger beliefs are, I think.
But I, for some reason, I keep thinking about ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
Which neither of us make. But
well,
if we
maybe because I'm thinking, like, you know, how do you get all of this? Or do you need to get this emotional connection into ceramics? But it exists anyway. If I'm thinking of the pieces that I've bought, like even mugs that I use on an everyday, it's because there is something deep and beautiful and lustrous in the glaze. It's because there is a connection with the way that I pick it up and hold it. And there is a weight with how it exists, and that anchors me into my space.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the same thing. And I think it's easy sometimes to underestimate the element of that. But I think it is within everything that people create and bring into the world. But I suppose what I'm just trying to get at with this whole conversation is it's very easy to get drawn into the mechanics or the visuals or the, you know, compositional, like how do I make a painting work compositionally and all of that kind of thinking, rather than invite people to think about, but why? What is my direction at the moment? And it is very much an at the moment thing, because I think it does develop over time. Why is this important to me? What am I trying to investigate, convey, understand? What am I obsessed with? What am I intrigued about? Those things, I think, stay very core to the thread of you, however that's expressed, whether that is in painting or whatever, whether it is like your obsession is about bringing beauty to the world or appreciation or what is it? What are all those values? And you could do an exercise like where you wrote them all down and cut them on pieces of paper and physically reorganized them. She says writing this down as an idea for something. So that it becomes something that you say, yeah, all of these things are important to me, but which one really? Which is the thing that if I had to put it above all the others that I use as a guiding principle, really?
Yeah, I think it's, for me personally, I have to have that. I didn't always know what it was, though. So it's not something I think you have at the beginning.
No.
Or I didn't. I was flailing around doing all sorts of things. I think we all do, trying things. And then at some point you realize, oh, I've got an idea now behind this. But I think for me anyway, it's got deeper. I think what you described as well, it's become deeper the more I've worked.
Yeah.
So it used to be at this level and now it's gone to a deeper level that I understand. And hopefully it'll keep going to that deeper level. But without it, I feel like I can see, particularly abstract paintings, but also realistic paintings, I feel like you can see a difference between you have something behind this.
Like a drive.
It's like meat behind it.
Yeah.
It's meaty somehow, whereas this is flimsy. It could blow over in the wind. And you can't describe, it's very hard to describe to someone what that is, except, it's a drive behind it.
You see, I think it goes back to this internal, external thing that sometimes you see people and they're struggling out. And often it's, but I don't know what I want to paint about, or what should I paint, or what should this be? It's like, well, that bit's kind of up to you.
Yeah.
You know, what is it? What's meaningful for you? Why? Because there actually has to be a reason. Otherwise, you know, you might be out just playing golf or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Something is in there wanting to come out, and you're in your own way. You've just got to find it.
Yeah. But it does take a bit of digging and uncovering, because otherwise you are just floating around on the surface, pushing shapes around. And that for me is, it's there is a learning in that.
Yeah.
There is a learning in that. You know, and we did that on that workshop we did in Yorkshire. I got everybody to do it in teams. Do you remember, with different bits? And what was interesting about that was that it was a team thing. So different people were saying, well, this should come here because of that. And actually people have very different instinctive drives to do things. But I think it has to come from that internal instinctive drive. That's what leads you to the answers of, you know, what do I do? What painting? How should I do? You've got to have that stronger reason that gives you that direction for doing it. Otherwise you get lost. And I've done it before, got lost, where I'm like, oh, I should be drawing. I'm drawing. Why am I bored by this? Because I'm not interested.
Yeah. When it shows up for me is when I start a series, like I did a few months ago, started a series of abstract paintings, made some quite pretty things and felt completely bored by them because I didn't have an idea behind, they weren't anything. They were mildly pretty. I'm not even saying they were that great. They were the kind of things that you think, oh, I don't want to cover that bit up. But there was nothing to them. And I've really enjoyed covering those with vintage papers and starting again, because it felt like me saying to myself, no, that's not authentic. That's you. That's like the art version of people pleasing. That's me going, look what I can do. I can put this color with this one and it looks nice. And that is not to, God, 8 years ago, I would have been thrilled if I could put this color with this color and it looks nice. So these are things that happen over time, I think. So if you're listening to this and you're more at the beginning, don't be sitting there thinking, oh my God, I haven't got any of this, because it, neither did we. It comes from the painting. It's like, I don't know which comes first, chicken or egg. It's like they both come together. Yeah. But you've got to be painting and exploring in order to find what it is.
And I think it is that two things is the, you know, what's the drive? What's the story, as in what's your story, what's your meaning, what's your reason, is in the one hand, and then, and I do this through.
Yes.
It's two things. So, you know, your drive might be like, let's stick with, I like to focus on things that are, you know, finding something beautiful in the everyday could be a drive. And I do this through glazes that I use in my garden, that I discover through colors in my garden. Or my drive is finding excitement so that life never feels like it's always the same. There are always new opportunities, and I do this through using paint in a more expressive way that puts me into situations that I have to respond to differently.
Yeah.
You know, my drive is to find calm, maybe because I've had a tumultuous background and now I'm looking for something calm. And I do this through many layers of, it's the two.
Yes.
It's when you get the two things, and it takes.
And when you're at the beginning, you might say, I like calmness and I like calm landscapes, but you're busy mimicking other people. So you're using colors or compositions that don't feel calm, because you don't understand the link between what you've just said. So you get there eventually by saying, okay, what do calm landscapes look like? What do calm paintings do that I'm not doing, when you're learning? But as you get further on, you start finding your own ways. Mm. Okay, what does that mean to me? If I say to you, I want raw, authentic paintings, what does that mean? Or if I say I want history, paintings that speak of personal history, what does that mean? It doesn't mean another
because there
person.
Are a million ways of doing that.
Yeah, and also what I often think is, it doesn't mean another person will pick up on what you've done.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever have this feeling? I have this feeling, just to lighten the mood slightly. I'll have a really satisfying day. Like on Monday, I was there for 6 hours painting, didn't get tired, loved every minute, made some things I liked, really happy. And then I was asked about my day by my friend, and I started to say, and I was like, it all just disappeared in a puff, because I can't describe it to you. This wasn't an art friend. I can't put this into words. Yeah, it was amazing. I stood on my own all day solving a problem that I made for myself that no one else asked me to. And I got some of it solved. It was brilliant, but nobody cares except for me.
So true. Why do we do this to ourselves? Yes, I think that happens.
And it feels a little bit, at that point, a little bit flippant. And that's when I bring myself back to my central reminder that there is art, music, visual art, books that have accompanied me through life and been a comfort and been a companion, because it's like a person who's sometimes dead is reaching out and saying, I feel this.
Yes.
Like you feel. Yeah. And that is an amazing thing that art can do. So when I get that feeling of, oh, this is ridiculous, then I have to remind myself, thank goodness that, you know, the Beatles didn't think it was ridiculous, or Mozart or Picasso or whoever we can come up with. I'm just pulling the most famous names out of my hat, but thank goodness they didn't think it was pointless.
And I think even in little ways as well, like there was something that I saw that was very helpful to me yesterday, that somebody had posted. She'd posted on Instagram that she'd been really excited about going for a job and then she hadn't got it, and you know, that disappointment, and now what? And that was really helpful to me in that moment because of something that I was also feeling. And it, like you say, it's like, yeah, you know, thank you. And I said, you know, thanks for sharing this. This is the first thing that I saw when it woke up. And it felt like there's a little message in this for me here somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's nice. That's why it is good to share. Right. And
that goes to what, sorry, quickly. That goes to what Seth Godin says about artists can be, you can be an artist in any form. That person was an artist on Instagram by sharing that thing which touched you.
Yeah.
Okay, so to close out, do you have anything that's inspired you, Alice?
I'm going to share, it's a podcast episode that I've mentioned before, Self Care Club. I enjoy it. And the one that I have enjoyed this week was on the 23rd of January. It's called Sexy Money Mindfulness. And they're very funny. They say we have to call it sexy because nobody else is going to listen to it otherwise. But it's about, you know, your relationship with money. And it just have this exercise in about, you know, really understanding what you want and digging into your relationship with money and what you think you need. And I think even beyond the realms of money, I think that's a nice way to approach it. So I enjoy their podcast. I think that they're fun. They often invite you to think about things in a different way. And then they kind of circle back at the end of the week. They must spend a lot of time recording podcasts, is all I can say. But that episode is particularly a good one.
So Alice has been very concise and sensible with her recommendations, and now I dive in with two recommendations and no specific episode. The first one is humorous. It's called Crushed Podcast. These are two podcasts. Crushed is a woman who just interviews famous people about the crushes they've had throughout their lives, starting with David Cassidy, Donny Osmond, or One Direction, depending how old they are, and going all the way through their lives. And it's absolutely fascinating because it ends up being a conversation about the nature of love, but it also ends up being funny. And people,
I think you've mentioned this before, so you've obviously had some really good ones.
I don't think I have. Yeah. I
because I only it doesn't matter started. It's good, well, to have it again.
I only just started listening in the last few month and a half, so if I did, I apologize, everyone. Could have, because I could be just old. But that's very good. And the other one I've just discovered is the Chase Jarvis live show. Chase Jarvis is a guy who runs something called Creative Live, which is online creativity education. He's a photographer and he has always had a YouTube channel that I've seen bits and pieces of. And I presume this podcast is, I presume they do the YouTube videos and the podcast together. But he just interviews people, creative people, not just artists, all sorts of people. But the one I'm listening to at the moment is the newest episode, How to Put Your Voice into Your Work, with James Victory. James is a graphic designer. It's a nice inspirational kickstart. And I listen to a lot of podcasts in the studio, so this is ideal. It can just be in the background while I'm working.
That's brilliant. Lots of podcasts. And also, just to balance that up, some of the discussions I've been having this week have been around creating space and quiet for yourself and making sure that you're not overwhelming yourself with lots of other people's ideas and things to listen to. So
don't
listen to any of that. Don't listen to any of that. Go for a walk in silence and ignore us completely. There you go.
So that's it from us, everybody. We will be back next week. You can find Alice at Alice Sheridan Studio on Instagram or me at LouiseFletcher_art. We'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Oh, you're too young for it. Are you being served? Are you not too young for it? Are you being served?
I'm too young for you being served, yes.
But you still watched it at a later day.
I watched it when I used to go and stay with my granny.
Did you? Yeah. Thanks, Alice. Granny's watched it. I was a child and I had a crush on the...
We didn't have a TV. We didn't have TV.
Oh, okay. I had a crush on the man who worked on the suit stall, you know, the suit department. I don't know. There was a youngish man, the only youngish man in it, and I was a teenager, so I just had a crush on him. Anyone will do.
It's bad.
Right, now that we've done the conversation for the younger listeners, let's move on.
I'm not doing trauma.
Okay. What are you doing?
I'm not doing trauma, and I haven't sorted my last week's website issue either.
Okay, so I've got an inspired.